Welcome everybody to the Magic Beans podcast. I am your host and my name is Shorty and we are back again for episode number 8. We're glad that you're here and that you've joined us again. I'd like to say a special welcome today to all our international listeners. We did a little bit of looking on our reports and statistics, and what do you know, people around the world are actually listening to us. They're getting on board with the Magic Beans, which is great to hear. So I'm joined again by another whole bunch of beans. Today we have Scott the Blaster Boy. How you going, Scott?
Evening all.
G'day. Chewy's back again. How you going, Chewy?
G'day from Australia.
Straya. And of course we have Cracker. How's it going, Cracker?
Well, I was all right until Chewy started talking.
Yeah, I'm sensing a theme.
Our accents are bad enough as it is. If we actually do the full Aussie accent, I think we'd very quickly lose all of our listeners, including our Australian listeners, as we spent them all.
Especially including ourselves.
Very good, very good. So, yeah, we have another jam-packed episode for you this week. Lots to talk about. We've been leading up to our discussions on our MCQ or playing in the MCQ, which happened a couple of weeks ago now for us. So, we'll definitely be diving into that. And then, of course, we had some massive news this week with the banned and restricted announcement. So, that's all on the cards for tonight, but we're going to kick it off with a little bit of education from Chewy. So, Chewy, do you want to get into what our magic terminology topic is for tonight?
Absolutely. So, I wanted to go through some of the terms that you might hear if you're at a magic tournament. And one of them that comes up fairly regularly and something that we've seemed to see pretty consistently in new sets is an edict. What is an edict? So an edict is an effect on the game that causes an opponent to sacrifice one of their creatures. So it's not a removal spell like a murder that we see in M20 where it is, you know, you pick your opponent's creature and you
targeted
say...
Targeted removal.
Yeah, yeah. So you point at that one and say, I'm sorry, that one's dead. Edict forces your opponent to make a choice. So there's pros and cons to that. We're not going to get into the depths of that. But edict gets its name from the common nomenclature or nomenclature for those listening in the US, from a card that was printed in Tempest, which was Diabolic Edict, which is two mana, a black and one mana for an instant, and it says target player sacrifices a creature, and it's a significant moment in the Weatherlight storyline, where Graven Ilvek throws Vati off, and the flavor text of the card says the fall will give you time to think of your failure, which is it's pretty cool and it's pretty sweet art. Have a look at it on Gather, it's pretty sweet. So that was kind of the first and probably the most iconic, probably because it's been around the longest, edict. There's been a number of others. The next one that came out 2 years after this one. So Diabolic Edict was printed in 1997. And then there was Imperial Edict a couple of years later in Portal Three Kingdoms. We've seen more recently Chainer's Edict and Cruel Edict. Cruel Edict is the exact same text on the card, except it's a sorcery, and Chainer's Edict has flashback. So against the sorcery, one and a black, target player sacrifices a creature, but you can play seven and cast it from your graveyard. So that's, a pretty useful card. There are a number of edicts in the standard set now, so you may be at your local Friday night magic and someone will say, I'm going to edict you. And they put down a card that is Liliana's Triumph, which is a uncommon from the War of the Spark set, which is an instant black and one again. And it says each opponent sacrifices a creature. So it's got multiplayer implications as well. But the line of text that it has is if you control a Liliana Planeswalker, each opponent also discards a card. So
a little bit of upside there.
A little bit of upside. And Liliana in standard at the moment, the six mana Liliana, the Dreadhorde General, has an ability that says each player sacrifices two creatures. So she has an edict built into the Planeswalker. So if someone ticks down their Liliana Planeswalker and says edict, that's that shortcut to know that that is you have to start sacrificing stuff. So that's the term that you might hear along the way. Have I missed anything, guys? Is there any edicts that you might seen? Like,
not specifically edicts, but what is what's a reason why an edict effect is better than just a murder that lets you just pick a creature and kill it? Like, why would an edict effect be more useful than a direct removal spell?
You might have a creature that has hexproof or protection from black. Yep. And so therefore murder, which has the upside of being able to tell your opponent which creature you want to die, can't target that creature. So if you've got one of the hexproof knights from the Dominaria set, the Knight of Grace, it has hexproof from black. So a murder, a traditional removal spell or a cast down, if we want to look at something with the same mana cost, can't target it. But an edict does have a way of removing that from the battlefield.
Yeah, because it's not actually targeting that creature. It's your opponent correct. Is choosing which creature to sacrifice. So, yeah, also gets around things like indestructible and that sort of stuff. So,
Progenitus.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, yeah, definitely has some uses.
Gets around things being regenerated. So, yeah, what's the vampire that you can pay 4 life and give him?
Adonto Vanguard.
Right, Adonto Vanguard. So you could like lightning strike that and it doesn't do anything. But if you Liliana's Triumph, there's no way of saving it. So it literally is you pick the card up and put it in the graveyard.
Yeah. The downside is that if your opponent has more than one creature, then they get to choose which creature they sacrifice. So yeah, it's very good in certain matchups when you're expecting your opponent to only have one creature on the board. But if they've got 2 or 3 creatures, then it's not quite as useful.
Absolutely, yeah. So it's so edicts have been played throughout Magic's history, in older formats, which we won't do any sort of deep dive on. But Joel pointed out that Liliana's Triumph has replaced Diabolic Edict in Legacy decks that also happen to run some of the 3 mana Lilianas. So it's effectively the same card, but you sometimes get that little bit of upside. So it's something that you would see, you know, at a Legacy event where you're playing some busted old cards. You also might see it in a War of the Spark draft or your local standard FNM. So it's a good term to have a grasp on.
It's also the first time we've had a instant speed edict in Modern, is worth noting as well. Oh, all the other ones are too old.
Didn't realize that.
Yeah.
No, what about the one that they gain life mana? Equal to the toughness? Yeah, it was played in the Mono Black Devotion deck. It doesn't get played because it gains you. Anyway, I can't remember the name of it, so I might be wrong.
it's probably a sorcery.
Yeah, could be.
Yeah. But yeah, it's definitely a term that you hear quite often, the edict effect. And yeah, for someone like you, Scott, there's a little bit of education for you. There's something new that you've learnt. Because, those effects do get printed on different cards at different costings and, planeswalkers with similar effects. So
there you go. I've seen it around, but I didn't really know what it meant.
Yep. Very good. All right, Scott, well, while we're talking to you, we might move into our Blaster Watch. So, as we mentioned, we had our MCQ that we've been talking about for the last few episodes, and you were there for first major tournament, or I guess sort of first real tournament. So, how did you go? How did you find it? Like, how was the experience? Did you have a good day? What did you reckon of it all?
Yeah, I did. I had a good time. This fortnight, since that tournament, I've taken a little bit of a sabbatical from Magic. I play a little bit of Arena from here and there. Bit of a break, yeah. I think we're getting ready for it and then having it. And sort of just, I thought, nah, just take a week off now. But but the actual event itself, I really enjoyed. Are we going to go into more detail about the wins and losses and things later on, or do you want me to talk about mine?
No, you can go. You can go into it now. That's fine.
All right, cool. Well, I did terribly. So,
hang on. I remember seeing a photo of you playing on table one.
Yeah, I was on table one, absolutely, at the very first game, in the very first match, which I won. I did win that particular game, but I lost the match, and then I lost every match thereafter. I think I actually played against Chewy at one point, and he took the wind right out of my sails by playing a stupid card that virtually null and voided any of my cost one spells, which was my whole deck. So, yeah, that was a bit of a shock to the system.
Chalice of the Void is a magic card.
Now, was yours a Tron deck?
Yeah. Yeah, we'll get into the decks that we played.
Yeah, we'll get into
but
that.
Yeah, I did. I was playing some Tron Lance. Yep.
All right. Yeah, but apart from the losing aspect, because I did hope to win at least six games, I think it was, I said in the last podcast, and I didn't get anywhere near that. But the experience was good. Everyone I played against was really nice, very friendly. I wanted give a bit of a shout out. I think I told you guys earlier in the week about this experience, but when I left you guys, I went out the front of the town hall, and there was just a bunch of people standing out there. I had a handful of cards still, business cards in my hand from our podcast.
Advertising our podcast, as we did.
Which we did a lot of. And yeah. And I was handing a card to one of the guys, and he goes, "Oh, I listened to this podcast." And it sort of threw me. I didn't know what to say. I sort of, okay, I wasn't expecting that. And then, so I introduced myself. I said, I'm Scott, I'm Blaster Boy. And he goes, "Oh, you're the newbie player." so I was quite stoked. I thought that was really, I mean, that made the whole day worthwhile. That little 5 minutes. And I wish I'd got his name, because I'd love to give him a shout out right now. Hopefully he's still listening to us. But yeah.
He knows who he is.
He knows who he is, yeah.
If you know, and we appreciate that he's listening.
Yeah. If it's you, tweet us or send an email in and let us know who you are so we can give you a proper shout out.
Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, so overall, it was a good day. Losses aside, still had a lot of fun. It was good catching up with you guys in a tournament sort of experience like that. Don't know if I'd do it again. I think it was expensive for what it was and losing. but it's actually inspired me now to do a little bit more Friday Night Magic. I'm going to head down to my local, maybe even just play a bit of Standard. I know that's Standard. A lot of people aren't playing it right now, but I might try some of that and use the Cavalcade deck that I'm using on Arena.
Yep. Yeah, and I know sort of with talking to you during the day, you'd mentioned quite a few times like you were struggling with sideboarding.
Mm, yeah, and it was not so much what was in my – I knew my sideboard and I knew what would play well against certain decks, but it was me knowing what deck I was actually playing against. I think particularly against, I think, Chewy's deck and another guy that was also playing Tron, I couldn't distinguish that, oh, hang on, they're playing a Tron deck. So it's finding those little tells, and well, they're not even tells really. They just, it comes with experience, I suppose. You get to know where certain cards are being played. That would be a particular type of deck.
And did you think that came from you were concentrating so much on your own gameplay?
I think so.
Yeah, you weren't sort of absorbing what was happening in the matchup a little bit.
Exactly. Yeah, I think I was very focused on what was in my hand and making sure I played the right card at the right time and in the right sort of order, that I wasn't really focusing too much on what was being put down opposite me. I think that'll come with time too.
Yeah, so given that you didn't win, you know, a lot of games or matches during it, do you feel like that metric of did you play your deck well, do you feel like you did a good job there, or are there mistakes that, you know, thinking back that you know that you made? Or do you feel like you did okay?
I think I played the deck well. I played it as well as I possibly could. I knew when to do certain things, and that I felt very comfortable with. But yeah, just wasn't focusing enough on what was going on opposite me to know when to bring certain cards in. And it was those sorts of mistakes that would cost me, because I would go to my sideboard after the first game and I think, okay, I'm going to bring in this particular card. But it would be against the wrong type of deck, because I couldn't read their decks very well because I just didn't know them.
And that's something we mentioned on the previous cast, especially with a format like Modern, because it's so big and there's so many different decks, and you're coming in almost blind, like with no real knowledge of the format and knowledge of the decks and whatever. There's so much to learn, such a steep learning curve, and not knowing the decks that you're playing and how those decks are trying to win and that sort of stuff makes it very hard. Whereas for some of the more experienced players, almost as soon as you play your first land and cast your first spell, we can kind of go, okay, I know what deck you're playing. I know how you're trying to win. I might not know every card that's in your deck, but I know what you're trying to do, and I know how that affects what I'm trying to do, and then what I'm going to sideboard in and take out and things like that. So, and that just comes from experience, and that's
I think what Shorty said there is an important point. We might not know the exact list that our opponent's playing, but I know if my opponent goes land Goblin Guide, I know what their game plan is. Or if my opponent says land Ancient Stirrings or something, that gives me the that information as well. So, and that informs my decisions in the game as well as sideboarding. You had the luxury though, Scott, of playing a very linear aggressive deck, so you didn't have to think about adjusting your game plan to beating someone. You're basically just asking a very specific question of can you kill me before I kill you?
My basic plan was just smack you in the face, and that was and hope that I'd do it really quickly.
So it's about recognizing an archetype, I guess. Like, are you playing against a control deck? Are you playing against another aggressive deck? Having cards in your sideboard for that. So maybe that's a guide to putting cards in your sideboard for the future. So what do I bring in against control decks or aggro decks? So rather than thinking about the specific lands that an opponent has played, think about what their game plan was. How did they try to play the first game, and what do you have in your sideboard that would either hinder them or improve your deck against that particular strategy?
Yeah, that's actually a good idea, that a sideboard guide based on the archetypes that you play against rather than specific decks, because it's always, anytime you see somebody's sideboard guide, it's okay, against Green Tron, you bring in this and take out this. Against an Eldrazi Tron, you bring in this, take out this. And there's always differences. But for a newer, less experienced player with less format knowledge, if you can get them to the point where they can identify an archetype, which if they go back and listen to our previous podcast on archetypes, then that's a good start. That will help to go, okay, all right, he's playing control. All right, well, in my control matchups, I want to bring in these cards and take out these cards. Or they're playing aggro, so I can take out this and bring this in. So yeah, that's a good idea, Chewie. I think we might retouch on that if we get into sideboarding a bit more at a later date.
Excellent. Future content. Woo.
Yeah, good. But you had a good day, Scott. It was an enjoyable game day. Yep.
It was a good day. And like I said, I probably won't do another big modern tournament again anytime soon. But
I don't think there'll be one for us for quite a while. Probably not till about this time next year again. So,
but I'm definitely keen to look into the standard format and, like I said, go down to a Friday Night Magic, because I feel more comfortable with that format too, because it's a lot of the cards I'm using in Arena at the moment.
Yeah,
anyway.
That's right. Yeah, and it's a bit easier to learn the decks that you're playing against and that sort of stuff. And it's also a smaller card pool, which will be getting smaller in the next month or so as well with rotation coming up. So,
What about you, Shorty? How did yours go? Is there anything any experience you could draw from?
So as we mentioned sort of in the previous ones, I ended up playing Green Tron. I started the day with a draw, which is always good. I played against Blue White in my first matchup, and our first game took nearly 45 minutes, which I ended up winning. And then he just managed to completely close out the game and win with a colonnade in the second game in extra turns after the time had run out. And that just set me up from the draw, and I was stuck in the draw bracket for the rest of the day, which is an unfortunate thing that happens in Magic tournaments. You get a draw early on in the day and you just get stuck playing against all the other people that have also had a draw, which means that they're usually playing slower decks like control decks or that sort of thing. So I basically ended up playing blue white against blue white control multiple times, and Tron mirrors and things like that. And yeah, well, it wasn't the best. So I ended up 3-4-1. So the three wins, four losses, one draw. No, it's a pretty average record there.
I would have taken that.
In my prediction, I was hoping to basically go 4-4, so I was not far off of that. But getting stuck in that draw bracket was pretty hard. But I got to play a couple of really fun Tron mirrors, which I really enjoy, the green Tron mirrors. It's a really interesting game, the way you play, and it's all about controlling the other person's lands and things like that to stop them from getting the upper hand. And yeah, they were a lot of fun, and I managed to win both of those, so that was good. But yeah, a thing that I got out of the day, other than, you know, the enjoyment of the day, hanging out with you guys and giving out our business cards and trying to get the word out there for the Beans podcast, the first game that I played that as I said, took about 40 minutes for game one, there was a point about probably 20 minutes into the game where I'm kind of looking at the clock going, okay, this is game one. He's mostly got this game locked up. Do I just scoop and go to game two and try and win games two and game three? And I basically gave myself a turn to go, all right, if I can cast this spell and have it resolve, I'm in this game. And I cast it and it resolved and I was in the game. And so we ended up playing it out and won the game. But it was this, like, I literally sat there, like, all through his turn or whatever, and had to think about, do I scoop, do I not? Like, and I think that's probably something we can go into a little bit deeper when it comes to knowing when to concede on a game and things like that. But yeah, it was definitely a learning moment for me, something that I got out of it. But other than that, it was a great day. Chewy, I think you had a better record than I did. How did you find your day?
Only slightly better. I started off worse than you. I lost round one, so I would have taken the draw at that point. And then I rattled off three straight wins. So I thought, you know, I felt really good about, I felt like I was playing good Magic. And then I kind of stumbled as I rounded the last corner coming down the home straight and ended up with a 4-4. Finish. There were a couple of poor decisions on my behalf. Like, there are some clear mistakes that I made, which definitely impacted the outcome of the games. And I also had one round where in the two games that I lost, I think I drew a total of 5 non-land cards. Sometimes Magic variance gets you.
That's the randomness.
I felt like, two of my losses were due to mistakes, and one of my losses due to, variance and one a bad matchup. That adds up to 4. Yeah. But still ended up at least breaking even. So as we've mentioned before, I had a great day. All my opponents were awesome. I've been playing Magic in Melbourne for a long time, so it was a good chance to catch up with some of the old school players. And it was awesome to hang out with you guys, which I found out on the drive in that it was actually Joel's first ever MCQ / PTQ. So, Joel, what was your first experience like of this tournament type?
It was fun. Like, you know, I had a great time. I didn't do well, but I mean, you know, like that's going to happen sometimes. I ended up 3-5 on the day. I was hoping to have the opposite and go 5-3, but one of the things that people always say about Modern is the format really rewards you for knowing your deck really well.
Yes.
And being able to know your role in the matchups. And I didn't know either of those things, as it turns out, with a deck that you have literally never had a real copy of until the day of the tournament. So I played Hogak. Just the Jund version. I was the bad guy. There were a bunch of groans when I cast Faithless Looting and Bin Vengevines. People were just kind of like, ugh.
Here we go again.
Yeah.
You're that guy.
I'm that guy. But yep. I played against a whole huge variety of decks, which was really sweet. I don't think I played against two of the same archetype, which was awesome.
I would have swapped you for that.
Yeah.
That would have been great.
But when you start in the 0-1 bracket, I lost very handily to Titan Shift in the first one. It was really good. I had a lot of fun. I made plays and immediately realized that they were terrible. And then there were other times where you just, you know, have a turn two Hogak and two Vengevines in play and you attack people for eight. And they just go, okay, let's go to the next game. They've got one land in play. So, like, the deck is stupid, right? Was stupid, I guess we should say. And I had a really good time, like everyone else. I had one opponent who was kind of salty, but a top deck of Vengevine and just hard cast it and won, which I don't think helped his salt. But everyone else is great. So, you know, it was good. I'd love to run it back. I'd love to, you know, do it with something that I have some more experience with, some more understanding with. But I have no regrets either. Like,
you moved off of Cheerios and decided to lock into Hogak. Are you happy with that decision, or did you end up regretting it?
I mean, I don't have a huge amount of experience with Cheerios either. So, I don't know that that would have made a huge amount of difference. There are games where I look at it and go, oh, man, if I'd just been on Cheerios, I would have smashed this. But, like, that's just your brain going, oh, you know, like, I can think of a way to talk myself around on, like, that horrible mistake I made or whatever. You can just go, oh, like, you know, we're pretty good at convincing ourselves that we're better than we are and that it's not your fault. And, no, I don't regret playing the deck. I did, as I've said before, Living End is my pet deck, and I did get absolutely crushed by a dude playing Living End, which was particularly hilarious.
Yes.
In game one, he cast Living End, and I sacked all of my board to my Carrion Feeder, and then he went, oh, I didn't know you could do that, and just scooped it up because I was going to bring back, like, a bunch of Vengevines and a Hogak and some other things. But then game two, he started on double Leyline of the Void, and, you know, it was good. It was a lot of fun. And so, I had a really good chat with him afterwards because he'd just built it, and so I was, you know, giving him some ideas around, you know, some of the play patterns that can come up with the deck. So, it was really fun to just have a chat with someone else who was kind of into the same archetype.
Yep. And what did we all think about, like, the metagame that we saw? Like, was it what we expected? Like, Chewy, I know you played a pretty good variety of decks as well, but did you play against the things that you expected to play against? What did you see at the top tables? I know you sort of spent a little bit of time walking around there, catching up with Isaac and things like that.
Yeah.
What did you see?
So I played, Eldrazi Tron, and which was actually the deck that ended up taking down the tournament, and it did feel really good. There was Eldrazi Tron up the top, there was Hogak, there was Burn and Humans. So that was like the top table metagame, but the spice up there was, and the unexpected deck were the Vizier combo decks. There was a couple of those that were doing really well, that, you know, a lot of players kind of weren't really prepared for. They were so worried about their graveyard strategies, or playing against the graveyard strategies, that, yeah, maybe it was a good tournament to play against, play with one of the creature based combo decks. But yeah, so it was a tournament that I felt like I played the right deck for. I played against Mono Red Phoenix, in one of the mid rounds. It might have been round four. And Chalice of the Void on one did a lot of work. It, you know, effectively shut off their entire deck and meant that, you know, my large Eldrazi, if they have reality smashes on turn three, could just take massive chunks out of the life total and finish the game really quickly. So, I felt like the deck was great. It felt really good. And there was, there was so much focus on the graveyard decks that playing something that didn't care about the graveyard at all was a really good strategy. So, I'm happy with the deck, and I would run it back again if I, you know, even in the updated meta, I would definitely run the same, at least maybe the same main deck back.
Yeah, yep.
I thought it was pretty sweet. There was a lot of variety. Like I said, I played against, I think, pretty much different archetypes every time. And the last round, I sat down against the dude who was on straight up affinity, like just traditional, it's been around for forever kind of thing. And he's like, this is the only modern deck I've got, but I'm wanting to come play some modern. So here I am. And then he's like, turns out everyone's got a bunch of Force of Vigors, which is really bad for me. But it was... Despite the fact that everyone was like, oh, Hogak is everywhere. And we talked about the fact that it's a really expensive deck to buy into. You know, it was a couple of grand sort of thing with all the lands and all that sort of stuff. So it's by no means a cheap investment. And Modern tends to be one of those formats where people go, these are the cards I have. This is what I want to do. This is what I want to play. And you play the matchup lottery is one of the things you'll hear about from time to time, right? Where, you know, like if someone sits down and starts casting Goblin Guides at you, Shorty, you're not very happy, right? You don't want to see Burn.
I do not like it. That was right. My last round matchup, and that was not much fun.
He was done before my first game was finished.
it was about 4 minutes for two games, and we were done.
So, like, sometimes you can just get lucky like that, right, and bring a, air quotes, bad deck to the format and just crush it. And like, that's what's sweet about Modern. So, I thought it was really cool. And, like, there were the people who were really good and really invested were playing, you know, those top tier spiky decks. But I mean, there was heaps of sweet stuff kicking around. It was nice.
Yeah, I think that was what I sort of found. I mean, I didn't play against that great a variety. It was two Trons, some sort of mill deck that it was actually entertaining to watch it, even though I hate mill decks, as Shorty probably knows. But like, this deck was just so ridiculous. It was literally creaming my library within seconds, and people around me were just laughing at it. But what I got out of it, though, was just everyone was really nice and friendly. And even though they saw that I was struggling at certain times, they would actually help me and try and explain exactly what it was that I was meant to be doing. I think they probably knew they were going to win regardless. So,
tell by looking at you.
They could just tell, yeah. They just said, this guy's got no idea. So, I'm just going to help him out, be a nice guy and win anyway. But I did like that. And I think the last deck I played against was an Infect, I think, from memory. So, yeah, there wasn't a huge variety for me, but it was just the people were good.
Yeah, the Magic community are generally good humans.
Yeah, I was about to say, big shout-out to the event organisers as well. Good Games ran a really tight event. You know, like some of the rounds went a bit long, which happens. But, you know, everyone respected the judges from what I can see. Everyone was super happy. It was a well-run show, for sure.
It's a cool venue there at the Coburg Town Hall as well.
Yeah, very nice.
That place. Yeah.
And the judges' attitude was really good too. I mean, there was one game where that mill deck player that I was talking about called the judge over because he wasn't sure whether what he was about to do was correct, that he could be ripping me off by doing it. So that, which was nice of him to actually call a judge to make sure he was doing the right thing. But the judge was super cool and friendly. And I think I had two interactions with two different judges, all really nice.
Yeah, very good. Good to hear you had a good experience. So I was just having a bit of a look at the top eight from the Saturday and the Sunday in Melbourne. And yeah, it was a pretty diverse metagame. Like there's a few Gax in there, there's a few E-tron, there's some blue whites, all that sort of stuff. So it was the metagame that we expected. We weren't expecting 70% Hogak. We were expecting a good diverse meta, and that's what we ended up with. But that's all going to change with what came out this week, earlier this week, I believe. We had a nice announcement. Do you want to take us into that, Cragger?
We did. On the 26th, we got the much-anticipated banned and restricted announcement. So, I'll quickly read it. So, in Standard, Rampaging Ferocidon is unbanned. In Modern, Hogak Arisen Necropolis is banned. Faithless Looting is banned. Stoneforge Mystic is unbanned. And for those half a Vintage player out there, Khan the Great Creator is restricted. Mystic Forge, Mental Misstep, Golgari Grave Troll are all restricted. And Fast Bond is unrestricted. We are not going to talk about Vintage at all because we know precisely nothing about Vintage.
We know Chris has a Vintage collection.
I played Vintage once.
So, actually, we've completely forgotten Chris. Chris, I'm sorry if you listen to this podcast. Chris did not have a very good day at the MCQ. He decided to play the Hardened Scales, and he didn't have much fun, and that's probably as much as Chris wants to say about
it.
Let's
just leave it there. Yeah.
He had a bunch of Hardened Scales in his hand and no Forests or any green mana in play multiple times. So, well, yeah, poor Chris.
Sorry, Chris.
Yeah.
Anyway, keep going.
Yeah, so that's basically it. I guess let's touch on Standard quickly. I guess Rampaging Ferocidon is unbanned. So maybe I should just quickly read that one out because it's been a minute. And it's a card from the Ixalan block. It is 2 and a red. It is a dinosaur. It has menace. It says players can't gain life. And whenever another creature enters the battlefield, Rampaging Ferocidon deals 1 damage to that creature's controller. So current top decks in Standard are Scape Shift, which is spewing out millions of zombies, which will ping you for one each time, and also Vampires, which has a whole bunch of life gain in it. So it's a really interesting unban because they... it's got like 3 weeks left, 4 weeks left before Eldraine comes out.
Yeah, it doesn't have much time left.
it's as Scott was saying, no one's really playing Standard at the moment. It's in air quotes a dead format because everyone's kind of gone, well, it's solved and we'll just wait for the new sweet new cards. And so I actually really like that they did this.
I think it's a bit weird,
but it's also kind of a free roll and it makes people think for the next few weeks and like, oh, hey, I can kind of just, you know, cheese out Scape Shift or something like that. So it's an interesting
move. It shakes up a stale format. And when, you know, Arena is the flagship for Magic at the moment, they want people to be playing it. So shaking up the Arena ladder has a lot of value for Wizards, I think.
Yeah, and it always seemed like a weird card on the ban list. Like it was banned, I believe, when like the Hazoret red decks were getting around and red was just super powerful, and they were printing all these decks that were kind of go wide decks, like all the mono wide decks and that sort of thing, and a lot of tokens and stuff like that. And it seemed like a tool that would have just added to how crazy good red was at the time, even though the card itself is not, it's not inherently super powerful, but it's just a, you know, an average good card, but it definitely would have held down a few decks at the time. But like the guys have said, now letting it back in just for a few weeks is going to force people to play slightly differently and change up how they're building their decks and bring red back into the spotlight a little bit, because it's been down for the last month or so since Scape Shift and all that have been taking over. So
one point worth mentioning there as well is that it's actually still banned in best of one on Arena.
Yes.
So it's only available in best of three because red is still quite dominant in the best of one format. So
yeah. And I wonder, like, just sort of touching on that, I wonder if red is actually that dominant in best of one, or if it's just that people do what I do and I just have red built and I just jump on and play three or four games really quickly. And so because of that, it gets played like red is the most popular deck because it's quick and easy to play and cheap and whatever. But I definitely agree adding that card to it in best of one would be pretty nasty for some people. So yeah, it makes it a little bit awkward having multiple ban lists, but it is what it is. We get used to it pretty quickly.
There's also precedent for it as well, right? Because of Nexus of Fate and things like that. So, it seems like Wizards are pretty keen or happy to kind of maintain separate ban lists purely for Arena Best of One, which again I think is good, right? It's nice that they've embraced the fact that hey, like Arena is kind of its own beast.
Ecosystem.
Yeah, it is.
Best of One is definitely its own format.
It's a whole different game.
Yeah, you can't just take a deck list from a Best of Three Grand Prix or PT or something like that and just put it straight into Best of One, because that deck is built with a sideboard. It's built as 75 cards rather than a 60-card main deck. So it doesn't just port straight over into Best of One. Best of One, you're only playing one game, so you tend to play slightly different cards, and you're facing a different meta game, and then there's also the hand shaping algorithm and things like that. So, yeah,
I think I can hear Scott salivating though. Scott, are you really excited about the fact that it says players can't gain life?
Yes. In short, yes.
All right, so that's probably enough about Standard. Given it's only going to be 3 weeks or so, it'll pop up, be aware. But the real surprise is here. Hogak was banned. I can't believe it. No one saw it coming.
Shock horror.
Oh, no. How dare they? Wizards.
It is good to see that they did actually just identify. And if you read the article, they did say, we've realized Hogak is the problem. We're not going to take a half measure. We're just going to get rid of the problem. And that's good, because they very easily could have gone, okay, we're going to ban Stitcher Supplier and Vengevine and a couple of other cards around it just to leave Hogak there. But it wouldn't have fixed the problem. The free 880 is still the problem.
Well, they had that in a previous modern ban announcement where they just they cut off the head with KCI, right? So they could have banned one of the, you know, could
always
have been
comes back to KCI.
But they still would have done KCI things, right? There's precedent there, is all I'm saying.
I think the more relevant one is they did it with birthing pod, right? And they talked about the fact that if they ban the parts around it, eventually they're going to print something busted that dumps cards into the graveyard because, you know, they just invariably loop around to that. And Hogak becomes broken again. And it was the same thing with the pod reasoning. It was like, this puts a real restriction on the creatures that we can print. And, you know, just being able to all of a sudden pod up an infinite combo, right? So, I think that's probably kind of the line there. But anyway, everyone knew that was coming. Faithless Looting. So, this one's been on everyone's watch list for years.
This made me cry.
It's made you cry, yeah.
This might be Shorty's favourite card, right?
Yeah.
Is it Phoenix is probably... flown off into the sun, I think.
Never to be seen again. Yeah, like you said,
it's
definitely people have been talking about banning Faithless Looting for a long time. It is a very powerful card. It's for if you don't know, it's just a single red mana. You draw two cards, you discard two cards, which for red to have is very good, but it just goes so well with all the graveyard decks. But it also has flashback. You can cast it from your graveyard for two and a red and do the same thing again. So, yeah, it's a very, very powerful card in red when a color like blue that's meant to be the color that draws a lot of cards has a whole bunch of similarly costed one mana spells that are all banned because they're too powerful. So, it's been on everyone's watch list for quite a while, but I think it was a bit of a shock for everybody that they actually did it now alongside the Hogak banning.
Yeah, I think, and like the articles, you know, is really well written. They've done a really good job with the last few BNRs in terms of explaining all the logic behind it. And for the last couple of years, there's been a real focus on graveyard strategies in modern, with Is It Phoenix being, I mean, starting and kind of moving backwards and forwards with, you know, like Pyromancer's Ascension as being a graveyard based strategy. And then also Dredge has been, you know, super powerful since they kind of unbanned Golgari Grave Troll and then banned it again. And then, you know, the prized amalgamate things. So there's been a real focus on that. And they're saying that they want to kind of take the focus away and, you know, move the, primary area of the game to being on the battlefield again.
Yeah, yeah.
I do have one quick, just Faithless Looting story, which is my favourite. the first time we played Legacy, I was playing Black Red Reanimator because, you know, I have a type. And in my hand, I had Grizzlebrand and Elesh Norn. And so, I cast Faithless Looting. And my opponent went, sure, resolves. And I just discarded them. I didn't even draw two cards. And he's like, you know, you draw first. And I was like, yeah, but it doesn't change anything. So then I picked up two cards. And he cracked up.
Doesn't
it was
matter
just
what
a
I draw,
thing.
I'm still discarding these two
exactly,
cards.
Exactly. That was the broken part of it. It wasn't that you got to draw the cards. It was the fact that you got to, you know, fill your graveyard with the relevant things.
It's also like, it's the selection. Like you get to, you get to draw the two cards first. And then discard them.
Unless you don't.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. But, yeah, it's a banning Faithless Looting definitely has quite a wide impact on the format because it really Huge. Has been a staple of the format. And it's in so many decks, so many top tier decks that are going to be affected. And, you know, as you said, a deck like Phoenix – Blue Red Phoenix, especially, and Mono Red Phoenix
as well.
Yeah, they're like, I don't know. Can they? I don't know if they can survive. I don't know. Like, we can go to playing Burning Inquiries and things like that. Well, but
I mean, you tell us though, right? Like, how hard is it to get a critical mass of one mana spells at that point?
Yeah, yeah. That's like the big thing. You can play cards like Cathartic Reunion or Tormenting Voice, things like that, that let you draw cards and discard cards as well. But they're two mana. And that makes such a big difference in the Phoenix decks. Like being able to go turn two, Manamorphose, Faithless Looting, Serum Visions, whatever. Like just 2 1 mana spells, and one of them being the Faithless Looting, where you get to put your two Phoenixes that you've drawn off of your cards into the graveyard and then bring them straight back. That's huge. There's no replacement for that, which is a good thing. in reality.
So this announcement on Modern for me has a very clear goal in mind, which is to try to slow Modern down by half a turn or a full turn.
Yeah, definitely.
Because, you know, Faithless Looting allowed you to play Hogak, which is an 8-8 trampler, fairly reliably on turn two, right? Yeah. So it just meant that the format was warped around either racing that or, you know, fighting against that. And we've had discussions around Leyline of the Void being, you know, in every deck. But so what I think they've done here, and I think this is a really good thing for the health of and the longevity of Modern, is to just pump the brakes a little. And, you know, there are a lot of decks that just were not viable anymore because the velocity of the format was just, you know, pedal to the metal. You either had to be, you know, this complete all-in deck to try to race against these decks, or you had to be a deck that was trying to answer these other specific decks and sacrifice other matchups. So Modern is supposed to be this diverse an enjoyable format where you can just play your deck that you know really well, as Cracker mentioned before. But it's what that's done and something they've taken advantage of is if the format's that little bit slower, they've unbanned Stoneforge Mystic. So it's players that, you know, haven't played Modern or weren't playing back in World Wake Standard. Stoneforge Mystic is a one and a white for a 1/2 core artificer creature. And, when Stoneforge Mystic enters the battlefield, you may search your library for an equipment card, reveal it and put it into your hand, then shuffle your library. So on face value, it's a pretty good way to go and get a juicy equipment card, but, it also has, pay one and a white and tap, and you can put an equipment card from your hand onto the battlefield. So you can do that at instant speed. It gets around somebody trying to play a counter spell on your equipment, and it's conveniently a body that can wear an equipment and start attacking with it in the next turn. But the accomplice Stoneforge Mystic throughout Standard, and the card that most people will are kind of jumping straight on with their Modern brews is Batterskull, which is a 5-mana artifact. So Stoneforge Mystic both finds it, and with the tap ability to put Batterskull in play, makes it a whole 3-mana cheaper. So, which
puts it in for 2 mana instead of 5.
At instant speed rather than, you know, in your main phase. And Batterskull has, 5-mana artifact with the living weapon mechanic from the Phyrexian block, from the new Phyrexia, I believe.
Yeah.
So it says when this equipment enters the battlefield, put a 0/0 black germ creature token into the battlefield, then attach this to it. And the equipped creature gets +4/+4, has vigilance and lifelink. So for 2 mana, you put in a 4/4 vigilant lifelinker in your opponent's end step that can't be counted off your
or as a blocker, a flash blocker.
Whatever. So it's pretty great. And then you can also pay 3 mana and return Batterskull to your hand. So then when it comes into the play again, you get the germ again and it becomes a creature right away. And you can move it around for, you know, equip it to other creatures for 5 mana. So it's a really powerful synergy between those two cards. Batterskull has existed, in Modern for its, you know, since it was printed, very, very rarely, if at all, saw play in any of the tier decks, maybe Blue Moon. But with, Stoneforge being unbanned, it opens up, it's the right time to, if they'd unbanned Stoneforge while Hogak was still, legal, it wouldn't have had any impact on the format because the format is too fast for it. So, but by dialing back the needle a little bit on Modern, it's a good time for this. And similarly to what they've done with the Arena format by unbanning Rampaging Ferocidon, they've shaken up Modern fairly significantly by slowing it down a little bit and by introducing potentially a whole bunch of different archetypes, right? So the first place my mind goes to is, like, I was playing in the World Wake Standard in the very early times of that, and there was a blue-white deck that played Jace the Mind Sculptor, Stoneforge Mystic with Batterskull, and the Swords cycle that was printed at that time. And also played a card called Squadron Hawk, which was a 2-mana 1/1 flyer. And but when it came into play, you could search your library for any number of cards named Squadron Hawk. So it was 2-mana, get a 1/1 and draw 3 cards. And when you had things like Swords that had an effect when they dealt damage to an opponent, having a whole bunch of flyers that you could equip them to, was pretty great. So, but in Modern, there are different, implications. There is Sword of Fire and Ice, which gives your creatures protection from red and blue, does extra damage and draws cards. Like, it's basically the perfect magic card. And the aforementioned Batterskull. So what do you think a Modern Stoneforge Mystic deck looks like? Do you think it's like the World Wake decks? Do you think it's like the Core Blade decks in Legacy or something completely different?
Ooh, I think it looks like Urza.
Yes, I think because it slots straight into Urza.
It also goes and fetches the Sword of the Meek.
Yep.
So, yeah, that's a thing. it's going to be really interesting.
What's the goblin from the Modern Horizons set that they were splashing for?
Engineer.
Engineer, yeah. So it's a strict upgrade to that card, right?
Oh, not necessarily, because the Engineer can also bring back things from the graveyard. So it kind of cheats things into play similarly, I guess. But isn't the Engineer 3 mana, or is it 2 as well?
I believe it's 3, and then 1 mana to activate it. So, yeah, right. Yeah.
So, I don't know about strict upgrade, but, I mean, it kind of lets you have a slightly different game plan because post-board, you might just bring in a couple of Batterskulls and a couple of the other swords that you were talking about, and you can change it up for when people inevitably have a bunch of, you know, artifact hate for you. All of a sudden, you just put a Batterskull into play and just beat them to death with it.
Yep.
Yeah, and if you are making a bunch of Thopters still, mm-hmm. even if you're not comboing off, again, having a 1-1 flyer that you can equip a sword to, you get a lot of value out of that, right? It's a pretty good strategy.
Yeah, definitely. Mm. Yep. Blue-white control will almost definitely – or it may not stay in the same current form of blue-white control. It may – I don't know, try to change a little bit more tempo-oriented blue-white, but – yeah, there's going to be a mostly control-based blue-white control and
control deck. Do you think Dice of St. Traft will get popular again because you can
Yeah, possibly. I've heard a few people talking about like blue-white spirits playing it because, again, you've got flyers you can equip swords to and, yeah, Batterskulls just goes good in everything. So, yeah, you may see a crossover of those two types of decks or it may, yeah, maybe a full blue-white tempo deck, or you may just still play straight control. But, yeah, I think most likely that's going to be the blue-white-based decks that are going to use it the most. I think one thing that I'm a little bit concerned about with Stoneforge, I know people have been talking about unbanning Stoneforge for a long time and just saying, look, Modern is so powerful. Stoneforge is, like, one of the most fair cards ever. Just unban it. Like, it's not going to do anything. We unbanned Jace. We unbanned Bloodbraid. Didn't do anything.
Every single ban and restricted announcement, there is discussion people are always about clamoring unbanning, for it. Right?
Yeah. I think the issue now is Force of Negation. So, previously, you had to wait until turn 3, at least, to play your Stoneforge and have protection for it. You can now play it on turn 2, get your Batterskull or your sword or whatever you want to get, and still have protection for it on your opponent's turn. And I think that is dangerous. Like that, having that Force of Negation. And I played against Force of Negation 3 times on the MCQ, and it was so frustrating because Modern players aren't used to playing against it. Like Legacy players have been playing against Force of Will forever. And so you're used to, okay, if I do this, there's a fair chance, even though my opponent is tapped out, that they can still counter what I'm trying to do. Modern, we haven't had that. ever, other than Pact of Negation, which almost nobody plays. But
well, it's because you need four mana at the next turn or you're dying?
Yeah, yeah, a lot.
But well, so, what I'm hearing
yeah,
with the-
I'm concerned about that.
With our speculation, right, on the decks that we're talking about Stoneforge going in, they're all like mid-range or control strategies. We're not talking about, you know, splashing white in mono red burn to play Stoneforge Mystic or anything like that. So I think if I agree with you, Force Negation has its stocks have certainly risen with this announcement. But if players go more to mid-range strategies, if the format, you know, shifts back a gear, becomes more mid-range, then the games go longer. So if you get your one big spell countered, yes, that is an issue, but you're playing a deck that's got a longer term game plan and they are down a card by countering your spell, right? So it's not just game over, or it'll be just game over less often than it would be with the current format where you go, if I don't resolve my turn three Khan Liberated, I can't win this matchup, and Force of Negation gets you. Their decks aren't, you know, the decks are going to be built with a, you know, more fuel in the tank, if you like. And as the format adjusts and slows down, you'll be able to play more mid-range decks. You know, Jund or Abzan might rise, and you know that.
Yeah, but I hate those decks.
do they still exist? Is the question, right? Like, what does it look like now? Is Jund still a deck?
Yeah.
Or does it just become Abzan?
Yeah.
I mean, like Renin 6 is a pretty good reason to be keeping to play Jund, right? But I mean, it's and that's one of the reasons why previously Wizards had talked about not unbanning is that they thought that it would actually harm diversity. So it's, I don't know. Like, you'll find in Magic there's a lot of hot takes. And
oh, really?
No. You've ever been on Twitter? It's going to be really interesting to see how it plays out. I don't know. I don't know if I'm a fan or not. I don't know if I'm scared of it or whether it's just going to, you know, ruin the format. There are a lot of people throwing around with their arms in the air saying, oh, it's the end of the world because, you know, Faithless Looting's gone and Modern's slower and now it's just going to be Stoneforge, you know, mirrors.
What I'm interested in then with that argument, with the argument that those people are putting forward, were they the same people that had the same argument with Jason Mind Sculptor?
Well, probably. And, yeah, man, I'm not saying they're right. I'm just saying that there are people who will do this. And, like, you know, there's other things that reflect this. I mean, we don't get into finance a lot, but, I mean, have you seen the price spike on this card?
Yeah, definitely wanted to touch on that tonight. So, for those who don't know, Stoneforge Mystic, after was no longer in standard and was not being played in modern, it sat on like $15 US basically forever, because it would get played in some legacy decks and, you know, Highlander, things like that. And then every now and then you'd get that speculation right before a B&R announcement and the price would spike and it'd jump up to about $50, and then it wouldn't get unbanned. It would come back down and then spike up again and then come back down. So it's gone in the last week since it's been unbanned. It went from 35 US and it is now over 70 US. So what do we think on that? Like, it doesn't have-
It's going to come down. It's like when Jace got unbanned and it was like $200, right? And then it dropped. So- it'll stay up for a while, and even if it shakes out to be one of the best decks in the format, not everyone's going to play it.
And the thing is, it usually gets played as a four of, as far as I know, whereas Jace does not get played as a four of in
that's
anything.
Valid.
The other thing is it has like no printings. It got printed in World Wake, and then it got printed as a Grand Prix promo, and that's it. So Jace got, when it got unbanned, it had a reprint. It was in one of the master sets. So the quantity was there. What I look at is, like, you compare it to the other cards in that sort of two mana, super powerful creatures in modern, your Tarmogoyfs, Snapcaster Mages, Dark Confidence, all that sort of stuff. They're all 60, 70, $80. And Tarmogoyfs were like 200 plus for a while, but they all hold that value. And they've had multiple printings. Dark Confident, Snapcaster, Goyf have all had multiple printings. So what are you doing? Like, Chewy, I know you mentioned off air that you have a foil World Wake Stoneforge Mystic. Are you selling it?
Like, yeah, well, currently accepting offers. Hit me up on Twitter at ChewyMTG.
I have two of the GP promos and I will probably sell them. I don't think I'm likely to play Stoneforge Mystic. I will probably sell them because I think they're not likely to drop, in my opinion, below 50 US any time in the next 2 years, unless it gets
really reasonable.
Rebanned.
I agree with you 100%. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. One thing I did want to mention with that is they did mention in the article that they are aware that there's concern with unbanning Stoneforge Mystic, but they're kind of treating it similar to what they did a couple of years ago where they unbanned Golgari Grave Troll to give it a test. And basically go, okay, we're going to unban this card and see how it goes. And then next ban and restriction announcement or a couple later, they went, okay, you know what? It's been out there for 6 months and it's not good for the format, so we're going to reban it. I could see them doing something like that with Stoneforge.
And again, I think the timing is quite deliberate here. The modern MCQ format is drawing to a close. The modern Grand Prix season is drawing to a close. So there are less events where it can dominate and ruin people's experiences. So it is a good time to test the waters with it.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Yep. Cracker mentioned when he was talking about the Hogak banning in that it limits design space for graveyards. Hogak does. So I guess one of their concerns would be it limits their ability to design equipment. So if they print equipment that's too good,
which they haven't done since Jute,
that is a lesson they have learned.
Battleskull was after Jute.
Yeah, but I mean, if you had to choose between the two, I'd take the Jute every day of the week.
I'd take Jute if we can put damage back on the stack. That'd be nice.
Oh yes, but yeah, let's wind back to pre 10th edition whilst we're in M20.
All right, Grandpa, that's enough. Yeah.
yes.
I think that's a pretty good.
It's going to be something that we talk about for the next few months. It's just going to keep coming up, right? Like every modern 5-0 deck dump you see from MITGO is going to have some Stoneforge list in it. So there will be literally hundreds of articles written about it, and every podcast is going to be talking about it. So I'm really interested to see how it shakes out. But I really like the idea of like a Jeskai tempo deck or something like that, playing, you know, Geists and Vapor Snags and Lightning Bolts and just
I could play something like that.
I know you love that kind of deck, and like Stoneforge Batterskull or, you know, Stoneforge Fetch the Sword, put it on, you know, your Geists, get in there, untap all your lands, hold up counter magic. Like there's some pretty sweet play patterns that it can enable, but it might be that it crowds out too many other potential, you know, small ball creature decks.
We may find that decks that weren't previously playing white are just like, well, you know what? It's not that hard for me to put in an extra color, and I'm just going to play four Stoneforges and a sword package, and away I go. And that's not good for the format because, Stoneforge and Batterskull are not good for burn decks and things like that. Like having a 4/4 Vigilant Lifelink dude on turn 3 is pretty hard for those sorts of decks to deal with. So
just play Rampaging Ferocidon.
Yeah, there we go. It's unbanned in standards, so it's going to be a modern all-star. You heard it here
solved.
First. Hot take.
And on that note.
Yeah, so it's definitely going to be interesting. Banning of Faithless Looting, massive shake-up. Hogak, we expected, but unbanning of Stoneforge, another huge shake-up. So, Modern is going to be very interesting. I don't know when we're next going to get to play a Modern tournament. Who knows when that's going to be? But I'm sure we'll all be sort of paying attention to the deck list. And like Cracker said, there's going to be a million articles. There's going to be a million people playing Stoneforge on Magic Online and brewing decks up with it. So, you're going to see a lot of it, and hopefully it ends up being a good thing. There was a lot of fear around Jace and Bloodbraid when they got unbanned, and they've turned out to be pretty good for the format. So, yeah, who knows how that's going to turn out. So, yeah, that's probably going to do us for tonight. That's pretty much all the things we wanted to go through. So, we'll wrap the show up. I think the next tournament thing for us coming up in a few weeks will be the Throne of Eldraine pre-release. I think we'll all be aiming to get to that. So, over the next couple of casts, we might do a bit of a primer on what to expect at your pre-release. And, yeah, hopefully we can all get out together again and play something there. I think we'd all be keen on that this time.
Yeah, we may even talk about Arena, finally.
Yeah, we may talk about Arena but at some point. We'll see how we go.
I haven't hit platinum yet, and I don't think I'm going to, so I'm just not playing at all.
I'm still in silver. I've had a horrible month.
I'm mid-tier gold, and I'm happy with that right now. I'm just going to leave it alone.
Yep. Very good. All right. Well, we'll wrap the show up there. So, yeah, we thank you for listening again. And hopefully, we've picked up a few new listeners from the MCQ. So, if we did, then, yeah, welcome on board. We're glad that you found us. So, make sure you've subscribed to us so you get our regular podcasts. But, yeah, if you do want to get in touch with us at all, or you are the random person that recognized Scott at the MCQ, then, yeah, feel free to hit us up over on Twitter. You'll find us at MagicBeansCast. You can send us an email, magicbeanscast@gmail.com. You'll find us on Facebook, which is also Magic Beans Cast. And Chewy has his YouTube channel going, which you can also find searching for Magic Beans Podcast. What was the last video you put up on there, Chewy?
I put up an M20 draft, which is amazing. If you haven't drafted M20, I highly recommend it. It's a really fun format.
I've definitely missed out on that. I really should get an M20 draft under my belt before it disappears. But, yeah, I've heard it's quite a good format. So, if for some reason you would like to find me on Twitter, you can find me at Peace Inc. Chewy, what are you?
At Chewy MTG.
Cracker?
I'm Joel Hill _.
And Scott?
At The Real Blaster.
Very good. We got it right this week. We're getting better.
I wrote it down.
Well done. All right. Well, that's going to do us for tonight. Thank you again for listening, and we will see you next time.
See you guys.